one of the things about doing case studies is that I'm never aware of what is going to help anyone. So I'm going to start with a case study that this young lady offered me earlier as a question. What do you do with someone who requests rent every month, perhaps month after month, and you've become an enabling church, and you're really not doing anything to help that person become independent, to grow beyond the point where they need someone to pay their rent? I guess every church is in a situation where a member or a neighbor requests rent, and each month it's the same story. Whether I've run out of money, or something happened and I misspent the money, and usually there's a fixed income or limited income. So what do you do in a case like that? Someone comes every month asking for rent, same story. Okay, next case study.
Every month?
Every month.
Same story, asking for rent?
Yeah.
You try to establish boundaries, right?
You want to establish boundaries.
Try to establish boundaries where there haven't been, or at least an understanding of this person.
I mean, you want to establish boundaries that haven't been there before. You have to know what the person is capable of in terms of employment. I mean, if the person's living on a fixed income, whether it's Social Security, disability, or public welfare, if it's Social Security, disability, then most likely that person is not able to work. Although, according to Social Security guidelines, you're able to earn up to a certain amount each week, and the person should be encouraged to earn that. Perhaps the church can provide part-time employment for that amount, or access to that. The more you know in terms of what resources are out there, the better for you. I think the church is the last resort in terms of providing monetary help, and it's never monetary help. It's always help in kind. You know, never give a person money. If it's rent, always make the check out to the landlord. So
you would want to see maybe what kind of family they might have around that could help them.
Certainly. I mean, anytime you're helping someone, while you don't want to be involved in social service screening, I mean, you do take a certain inventory of the person and family. You know, how much income is there? How many people? What other, you know, what resources are coming in? Whether it's Social Security or disability or public assistance or earned income, and then what is out there? You know, is this the best possible place for them? Are they on waiting lists for Section 8 housing, or are they just living in quote unquote luxury because they want it and they can't afford it? I mean, it's like helping someone with their addiction. I mean, I know how much I can afford to pay for mortgage or rent. And if the person is overexpending, then it's important that we or someone else, hopefully someone else, can come alongside and say, in all honesty, you're living outside of your means. You know, here are options. But how to do that and still be loving? You know, the boundary thing is how to say no, or how to be honest and still come across as someone who cares. And that all has to do with relationship. You know, if you've established a healthy relationship where that person respects you, then they'll appreciate, or maybe they won't appreciate you, your giving honest feedback. But the important thing is that what you say is going to give God the glory. You know, if you're acting in tough love, you know, God, you know, for the most part, God is going to be glorified. Now, the person may not want to hear it. And it's like scripture saying, no child likes going through discipline when he's going through it, but God only disciplines those he loves. Well, sometimes we just have to be tough and share the hard news. Get to a point of saying, we're not able to help you anymore. Or our ministry has been paying the rent of a ex-felon for about a year and a half. We had agreed to pay for the first year, and then I allowed for an extra 6 months because the person wasn't ready. Didn't have job skills, and I just gave her 6 months' notice that we're not going to be able to do this beyond June. I didn't want to do that, but I felt it was necessary. And she said to me the other day, I guess I knew this day was going to come sometime. And so she knows that she needs to earn an extra $375 a month. Now, it's she and her husband. They're both on disability. And I think they can do it. And I got to a point where I said to myself, I just need to encourage them to do it and give them instructions as to how possibly they can do this and have them praying together for this. So it's going to help in a variety of reasons, of ways. You know, I don't just sit home at night thinking about all the ways I can say no. I do that in the morning at work. Yes?
When you have someone approach your church for help, whether it be, you know, financial or, you know, other kind of physical need, do you have any kind of a standard, I don't want to use the word formal, but maybe standards have it better, process that you go through to try and determine, you know, need and you know, what other needs there might be, and maybe set a plan in action? As you can tell, they're a structured person.
I basically say, I'm sorry, we're not able to help you. How's that? We are not a social service agency, but we've identified what agencies work for the benefit of citizens of Philadelphia. So we're not, we stopped providing anything that was redundant or duplicating what other churches were doing. around the corner, there's a church that's open Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning, and they do all that screening, and they provide for that kind of help. There's another church that provides food. There's another church that provides clothing. There's another church that provides meals. We're going to provide the relationships and the networking. And we've told the deacons, you are not to do any social service screening. You know, if people come in for help on Sunday, you know, provide whatever is needed at that point, but provide resource information for Monday so that they can access those things. I mean, we've got a form, very elaborate. And I said, why are you doing that? So when people come in, we'll provide information where they can access resources. But, I mean, we have said, and if you go to the blog site and read that article on setting limits, it'll have the letter in there that we hand to people wanting cash or something else. We've got 1,600 members, and we spend somewhere around $35,000-$40,000 just for member benevolence. Plus, Acts Ministries works with hundreds of homeless men, and so I mean, we already have put a boundary on who we're going to help and who we're not going to help.
Say that individual wasn't a member.
Excuse me?
If you're talking about mercy to membership,
yeah.
I'm assuming that looks different.
Then we'll do everything we possibly can, because that person is part of the body. Or another Christian. It's a member of another church. If their church is not able to help them, we'll communicate with that church.
How do you assess what kind of and how much help to give to a member?
Well, that's a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll know how much to give based on what they say, who knows them. I think it's really important to be cynical and not to trust that what is said is the complete truth. So you will be doing some investigation, and you want to establish a good relationship, but first you need to find out that no information is being withheld. Yeah,
my original question was much like hers about, you know, treating members actually differently than you would an outsider. But what about those people who may profess Christ, but, you know, there's a little tendency maybe to manipulate, hop from church to church, those sorts of things?
There are a lot of people who do church hopping because there's no accountability, and it's easy. If they're manipulative, it's easy to get what they want. And that's why people go from church to church. We used to be people were going all the churches within, say, a 4-square block area, 10, food or clothing or needing money for this, and, you know, with specific item needed. And we found out in conversation that the same person was going, making the rounds, and a lot of people were making the rounds. And then others were doing the same thing. They found out that, you know, if you can get $5 for this, maybe you can get $10. Or, you know, everybody was in need of a bus ticket to Pittsburgh or Birmingham or Detroit. because they're here to get a job, and it didn't pan out. While they're at Independence Mall, their backpack was stolen with all their belongings, including their ID and their credit cards and money. Same story. Different people, same story. And it was making the rounds. People talk, you know, do good church talk when they want to be manipulative, and they do that because they know you're a deacon. You want to help them, don't you? Well, you do, but you don't have to. You want to offer real help, not just what they want. Everyone who comes in is going to want something. It's up to you to be discerning. And if you have some boundaries as to who you're going to help, how you're going to help, what help you're able to do, what help you're not able to do, that's going to help with the boundaries. I got a call some time ago. From a church out in the Midwest someplace. This first one. Someone came to the church. He says, someone came to our church on the night of choir practice and requested food. So someone sought a deacon who was in the choir practicing. The deacon goes outside alone to speak with the requester, who now asks for money. The requester said his mother had died the week before, and they had spent all of his available money on the funeral, and he had nothing for food. The man again asked for cash, and the deacon refused to give money, and the stranger berated him. He still refused to give cash, but then he went in the requester's car to buy groceries for him. What would you have done?
I don't think he should have gone alone out there. I mean, he maybe would have been better to go with another person, first of all.
Yeah. Yeah, don't act alone in a situation like that or impulsively. What's the danger of going out alone?
He doesn't know who that person is. He doesn't know what their real intentions are.
Right. He doesn't know who the person is or what his intentions are.
That's already changed his story a couple times, too. Like, first he says that his mother had died, and then he says he's a pastor for 20 years. So he's kind of not being forthright.
Yeah. In just the 17 years I've been at 10th, I've learned that about 95% of people asking for help are pathological liars. And we need to discern the other 5%. But most people who come asking for something really want cash. So he went in, said he needed food. Someone knew that there was a deacon in the choir, went and got the deacon. First of all, could you have said to the person, "I'm sorry, there's no one here to help you right now"? This is say Tuesday night, 8:30. Is that legitimate? Just say, "I'm sorry, there's no one available to help."
For food?
Yeah.
When you're a Christian standing there?
It's 8:30 at
night.
Whether
you're a deacon or not?
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong. I'm saying...
Could you?
Could...
Will I be able to say it?
I know what you would say.
You're probably right. You know what I'm saying. But I'm not going to tell you more.
I mean, here it is. It's 8:30 on Tuesday night. Is the person going to starve to death? You know, Monday is the next day. I mean, when the next day is a weekday. Social service agencies, food pantries, etc., are open. Does the church, Christian church, have to give into the tyranny of the urgent?
Do they have to? No, but I think it's a call of the Spirit and discerning what the Spirit wants you to do at that moment.
Okay, so.
Be an easy act of kindness to get them something from the kitchen. Say, you know, come back tomorrow and we can sit down with you.
Okay.
See what we can really say.
Okay. The church should have some kind of resources for emergencies. Like, I mean, what we do for the with the deacons is have in the evening, Sunday night, if someone comes in and asks for food, is provide a bag of non-perishable food. So we can just keep it in a closet, no refrigeration needed. Enough for the evening and the morning. And with a list of resources of where, if they need a food pantry, where they can get food. But not to do more than that. So we're trying to make it a win-win situation. I mean, most people would want lots of stuff that they can sell. So we give the basics. You know, if someone says they're hungry, we're going to provide peanut butter and jelly, bread or crackers, fruit. That's food. I mean, people can say, I'm sorry, I don't want that. But... They have. They have. I mean, I've walked to my office from the subway carrying my lunch, and someone would come alongside of me. Someone did come alongside of me and said, excuse me, can you help me with money for food? And I said, well, here, you're welcome to have my lunch. And he said, oh, you know, I'm sorry, I've got food allergies. So I said, all right, let's go down to the corner store and I can buy you what you need. I've been there, they don't have what I can eat. And so I said, I'm sorry, I'm not able to help you. But most of the time it's on the terms of the people coming for quote-unquote help. But we can, I mean, we do want to honor God. We do want to act Christianly. Sometimes no is the right answer. And if it's, the truth is that, I'm sorry, there's no one here who can help you. The truth is that no one here is stupid enough to go with you or to give you money for what you want or need. Now, if you have food in the church, then the thing to do is to provide, just like Ephesians says, as far as words that are fitting for the moment, that build someone up. So you provide what you can, but you don't want to give someone a week's worth of food. It's Tuesday night, you know, give enough for tomorrow. I mean, for the evening and the morning. But it's so easy to be sucked in. The person might say, you know, you have to help me. Isn't that what the church is about? Well, that's what the person wants. That doesn't mean that that's what we should do. I mean, we want to glorify God. We want to benefit our neighbor. We don't want to encourage anyone to sin. Now, I never heard what happened to the deacon who went in the car. But that was a mistake. That was putting himself in danger.
Do you have like a list of like verses maybe we can read so we can become a little more wise? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not coming.
There's this book.
Okay.
There's no formula, other than praying for wisdom, and you know, I think being wise as servants and gentle as doves is, you know, says it pretty much. There's a lot of wisdom in Tim Keller's book. There's a little bit on my blog site. A lot of the things that I teach have to do with mistakes that I've made. And I could, you know, if I write a book, it would be Don't Let This Happen to You. You know, or Don't Aspire to Be a Deacon.
I mean, I am tracking with you. I mean, I'm seeing you know, Jesus seeing through all the stuff in somebody and going right, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing, you know, I guess it was Peter and Paul, like, you don't have money, but this is what we have. You know, I see, you know, but I just, I tend to, like, overkill. Like, can't they come live with us? You know, like, thank God for my
husband. Can you leave your name and address for everybody here?
I know. I know. Thank God for my husband.
And there's someone in the back who wants to do the same thing. Yeah, it's hard. It's really important to have an accountability partnership with another deacon or someone else involved in Mercy Ministry, so you can say, you know, here's a situation. Should I do this? Shouldn't I do this? Or if you've already taken action, say that, you know, this is what I did. I don't feel quite right about it. Mistakes are great learning experiences. It's so interesting, all the stupid and naive things that I did early on, and God just sharpened me and wisened me up. Is that a word? Wisened? It doesn't matter. It comes from the Greek, whiz. But yeah, experience is a great, great teacher. But you don't have to reinvent the wheel. There's so many other people here who have done things that they're not so proud about, and those are great learning experiences and building blocks for wisdom and for honoring God with the way we do mercy ministry or deaconing. Still have a question? No. Okay. All right. Here's a question I got, the second to the last paragraph. I received this call. I need your help. My name is Mike Kelly, and I live in California. I'm attending a funeral in Philly, and well, I ran out of money. My credit cards are maxed out. I need $86 to pay my hotel bill, or they will evict me. I have nowhere else to stay or store my luggage. I've got 12 pieces of luggage for a funeral. I can't go to a shelter. I called them all, and they can't help me. The PCUSA office referred me to your church. Can you help me? Listen, I'm using a borrowed phone, which I have to return in just 3 minutes. What do you say? Will you help me? It's the end of a business day, and no one can help me. No one wants to help a Christian. He said that without breathing.
That's like a telemarketer.
Well, he would have called me at 6 o'clock at home. He was.
If you help me now.
Yeah. Okay, so what are the red flags? What would you have done?
This guy's going to fall in if we don't help him.
He's going to what?
This guy's going to fall in.
Yeah, this guy's going to fall on him if we don't help him. Like many manipulators, it was like, you're my last chance. You alone can help me, or I'm going to die. Is he going to die? Are we his last hope?
He
can sell his luggage.
If they want you to give him cash, or how do
you
want to get the money?
We didn't go that far. I mean,
put it in the box on the corner.
I said that I wasn't able to help with cash, period. I said immediately, I'm sorry, the policy of the church is not to help with cash. And he repeated that the PCUSA office referred me. Well, so that's my boss then, I guess. But I mean, he knew Presbyterian Church. He didn't know 10th was PCA. it's amazing how many people end up at 10th because for a long time it was known on the street that 10th is easy. You want some cash? Go to 10th. Yeah, I think it's on the bathroom of 30th Street Station. this last one, a pregnant woman came to the church and asked me for help to repair her car, which broke down on I-95. She said she needed the specific part, which cost $75, but her husband could install it. They're on their way to a new home and a new job in Baltimore. Should I help them?
Kurt's asking if you maybe meet with the husband and find out more background.
Well, you always want to get more background. Why did they end up at 10th? At 17th and Spruce, if they were on 95.
Exactly.
There must be a sign on 95. A billboard for a good time. Go to 10. Yeah. Learn about Jesus. That's.
What's the make and model of your car, and then ask the husband the same thing?
Yeah, well, that's why the husband didn't come in, but a pregnant woman, hearing vulnerable, came.
Yeah.
Now, it turns out that there was a racket going on by the Russian mafia sending pregnant women with this story. Now, she wasn't pregnant. She was wearing a pillow. But she appeared to be telling the truth. And it was only $75. You don't have to do anything. My husband can install it, but we're really in a hurry because, we're going to Baltimore. How did they get to 10th? And why not New Life Drescher? They know about you. There are lots of stories out there, but it's really difficult to act immediately with wisdom and show caring and the love of Jesus, not to slam the door. But there's so many incidents like this where churches that want to do good and they think, okay, here's someone who's vulnerable and needs my help, and I've got the power to do this. $75 for a part. I don't have to install it or get my hands dirty. But is it legit? And if you say, I need to verify that by speaking to your husband, or the husband buy the car so it doesn't get stolen. So that's, you know, that's the next line you might hear. Or she might faint labor pains, I don't know. Men manipulate, women manipulate. You know, there's a sin across the board. Someone wants something, they're going to try and get it.
How do you, I guess, turn them down in love and yet still try to acquire more information to figure out if it's true?
Guessing is good. That's a difficult situation, because you want to act with wisdom. Mm-hmm. I happen to know already from some experience that this wasn't legit, and so I said, you know, I'm sorry, we're not able to do that. But there's a church around the corner that might be able to. Now, the St. Mark's around the corner will do all the screening. And if it's legitimate, they'll be able to help. And they've got people who can do something like that. But if I believed it was legitimate, then we would have done something. It's, you know, sometimes my heart just, you know, I just grieve for people. But I still won't put money in their hands. You know, someone wants a prescription, someone who I don't know. I just might go with them to the pharmacist and get it. I mean, it all depends what it is. And it has nothing to do with how I might feel that day. I'm not feeling well today, so don't ask me for anything. That doesn't come into play. Sometimes it's tough, and we act. You know, I've acted because I believe it's for God's glory, and I just have to take a risk. But still, I never put cash in anybody's hand. We've got 1 minute and 10 seconds. This middle paragraph, I got a call from a church in outside of Chicago, and someone came to them around Christmas and needed transportation to Birmingham, Alabama. And so they provided it. And pretty soon, lots of people were coming to their church for bus tickets to get someplace. We don't help people get out of town. We were hit so many times. That's what I told this deacon. We don't help people get out of town, period. And there's not enough information to gather, but the person was homeless. Try to work through Traveler's Aid or some other emergency transportation place. You help one person like that, and then lots of people will begin coming once they hear that your church is easy, they'll do that. And then all of a sudden, you've got to prevent people from coming. Because they're lining up. Lining up for whatever you're giving away. So, set boundaries. Okay, I'm done.